high school sports don't exist. Wait, no. We don't like that world. Different world, please. Ah, that's better. The Central Valley Sports Report starts now.
Good morning. Happy Saturday to everybody out there. This is the Central Valley Sports Report, 1430 ESPN, and I am your host, Paul Metters, live here at First String Sports, May 20th, the year of our Lord, 2023. First String Sports, definitely the place to be. They have been my day one dudes, man. These guys are awesome here. Blackstone Avenue, you know where it is, in between Sierra and Herndon Avenues. I do my show for the Letterman's Jacket Room. I'm looking at Letterman's Jackets right now from Clovis High, Sierra, San Joaquin Memorial, Clovis East. What do I got behind me? Bullard, Selma, Central, Kerman. Got it all. Come down here to First String Sports. They are awesome. We love them. They do a fantastic job here. They're the leaders, man. It's the only place where you can get your Letterman's Jacket. So be sure to check them out. All right. So, huge week, right? And the next 2 weeks are huge in the high school landscape here in the Central Valley. What's going on? Well, tons of stuff. Obviously, we are in baseball and softball brackets. First couple rounds are done with next week. Well, let's see. So, yeah, so next Saturday, going to be championship games. Obviously, Friday as well. So 2 days of championship games up and down the Central Valley. The baseball championships are going to be held at Rawhide, softball, Margie Wright Stadium. Yeah, this is it, man. We've been talking all year since the beginning of the school year, way back in August, about all these championship games and predictions and looking at max preps and all those things that we love to do on social media, on the Twitter, and then obviously on the radio as well. So, yeah, I mean, this is it. This is an exciting time when spring sports come to head. And we also want to mention track and field as well, right? The Masters meets happening at Buchanan this weekend. Next week's the big one, state track meet, CIF. That's a huge deal that Buchanan hosts. They do a phenomenal job. So anyway, we're wrapping stuff up. We are winding down, not only with schoolwork. You know, I'm a teacher, so I'm counting down the days too. My middle daughter is graduating from Buller High this year, and so things are certainly moving fast in the world. On the show today, what's going on? All right. After the break, we're talking with Gabe Camarillo, my partner in crime. Gabe and I were able to check out the Buchanan and Rigetti baseball game. Again, we're going to be breaking down those games, reviewing what happened this week as well. But Gabe and I are going to be chatting it up after the break. At 10:30, Clovis softball coach Mike Noel, defending D1 champs. I bet a lot of you guys forgot that. But, yeah, Clovis, they are the defending champs. They had a bye in round one. They're the 3 seed. They shut out Buchanan to advance to the semifinals. They're going to face No. 2 Central on the road, a track opponent, a foe that they are definitely familiar with. At the top of our No. 2, what do we got? Well, we got Oscar Hirschhorn. You guys know him as the Fresno Pacific head baseball coach. Oscar is just a phenomenal guy, absolute phenomenal guy. He is Central Valley through and through as well. Graduated from Kerman, played at Reedley College. Coached Sanger High and has done a great job. He's the one and only coach that Fresno Pacific baseball has had. Looking forward to talking to Oscar. You know his sons, Holden and Houston, right? They were on the show about a month ago, juniors. He's got a freshman as well, and his freshman son pitched 6 innings yesterday in their playoff win. Yep, freshman son, 6'5" already. So really looking forward to talking and catching up with Oscar Hirschhorn at the top of our No. 2. At the bottom of our No. 2, Hoover baseball in the house. David Jones, the coach, he's done a great job with that program. This guy is all in. He was on the show last year and very, very passionate, trying to rebuild that program. And they're still alive in the playoffs in D4. They beat Madera South 9-2. They are in the semifinals. They're going to be taking on No. 1 Liberty Madera next week. And so, of course, he's going to bring a couple players. So brothers Asa and Aiden Medina are going to be joining us as well. Again, that is the bottom of our No. 2. I mentioned in my opener about how life moves very, very fast. Well, it certainly does. And well, what's going on right now? What time is it? Well, it's 10:09. At 11 o'clock, my oldest daughter is getting married, and her bridal shower is going on for a couple hours. And obviously, my wife and my mom and, tons of friends and family and aunts are coming into town and, other grandmas. And so it's a big deal. It is a huge deal. daughter's birthday is Monday, and she's getting married on July 22nd. And, you know, if you guys know me, you know on my show, I get pretty personal at times, and I like to share a little bit of what's going on in the world, and hopefully people can relate. But, man, life does move fast, and just encouragement to everybody out there to enjoy the moments. And I believe I certainly do. I know we get caught up a lot in what's going on in the world and, you know, my own job and, you know, some of my own selfish needs at times. But it's good to reflect and, you know, enjoy the moment as well. And, you know, life does come at you fast. And so, you know, my oldest daughter's getting married, which I still have to slap myself sometimes because it doesn't seem real. So anyway, it is certainly something to behold to be in a situation like this, and I know a lot of people can relate. I definitely want to get into some baseball scores. Yesterday we mentioned that I was able to watch Buchanan and Rigetti, and Colton O'Toole, senior pitcher, pitched a complete game shutout. If you go back to their opening round, Buchanan shut out a Rio Grande 3-0. So in two playoff games, Buchanan pitchers haven't allowed a run. Two complete games as well. Yeah, he was on. I believe Rigetti had 7 hits in that game. Weren't able to push any of those runners home. Buchanan scored a run on a sac fly. A little bit of a controversial play at the plate, but we re-recorded it, and we saw that Buchanan player slipped his hand in there at home plate before the tag. And then a freshman stepped up. Seems like Buchanan always has a freshman that that just clutches up in playoff times. And Austin Finnegan. He especially the second half of the year, this kid has been lights out, and he blasted a home run. I mean, imagine a freshman coming up and hitting a home run in a playoff game. Well, this kid gave Buchanan a 2-0 lead, and Colton O'Toole took care of the rest. So they're going to move on, and who are they going to play? They're going to play Stockdale, 4-2 winners over number 11 Liberty. Stockdale is the defending D1 champs. It's always tough, when you got to go down and play in Bakersfield, Buchanan's not going to have to do that because they're going to have a home game. Now, it's scheduled for Tuesday of next week. A little bit of talk. You have the option to move it to Wednesday, but I think it's going to stick with Tuesday. So that game will most likely also be at 4:30. So Stockton and Buchanan in the D1 playoffs at the bottom of the bracket. Well, what happened at the top? Huge upset, guys. Huge upset. Bullard went down. The number one Knights. They lost to Centennial 6-2. Centennial came out with the 3-run home run in the first. And Bowler was not able to respond. I believe it was a 6-1 game. The Knights got a run late, but well, they were upset. And I'm shocked. They had a 22 game winning streak coming in. I know there's a lot of talk, right? The C-Mac was down this year. Let's be honest. And they weren't challenged very often. They went undefeated in league play. They go down. Big shocker. So that sets up Centennial at Redwood. Redwood beat El Diamante. They're the 4 seed. El Diamante was the 12 seed. They shut him out 3-0. Reese Bueno went a complete game. He's an excellent pitcher. He's a D1 guy. One of the reasons why I'm a little bit sad with Bullard losing is because we were denied a Joey Volchko and Cam Snyder matchup on the mound. Talk about Joey Volchko a lot. He was on my show a couple weeks ago. He's a dude that's going to be drafted. He's going to be drafted maybe in the first round, possibly the second round, topped out at 98 this year. They were going to be coming to Bowler to play if Bowler would have held on and beat Centennial. But, alas, that is not happening. I'm very tempted. You know, I teach in Traverne. So Redwood obviously is in Visalia, but I might go watch that game. I got to see this kid pitch. So Centennial, Redwood, the top of the bracket, D1 semis, and Stockdale and Buchanan. In Division One, let's move to Division Two. Bakersfield Christian defeated Highland 2-1. Highland was the 8 seed. Bakersfield Christian is going to take on Lompoc, who defeated Lemoore on the road 10-6. So Liberty, So Bakersfield Christian, Lompoc playing Tuesday. Lompoc the 12 seed, Bakersfield the 1. Cabrillo beat Central in Division Two 10-4. And St. Joseph shut out Kerman 5-0. Now, that sets up the Cabrillo and St. Joseph's matchup in Division II semis. Now, I have some thoughts about Kerman and St. Joseph's. Now, we know what happened last year with Kerman's undefeated season. They were 28-0, number one seed in Division II. St. Joseph's 16th seed. Now, those guys got better. They got some transfers in. We know what happened last year. Kerman's undefeated season came to a screeching halt in round one to St. Joe's. And St. Joe's beat him again. Kerman was the two seed. Now, St. Joe's, I think, is going to be a very, very dangerous team in the next 2 or 3 years. They have a coach that's tied to some USA baseball, so those guys are going to get some players. We know what they're doing in basketball. They've built a dynasty already. Football, they're going to be a Division I powerhouse in a few years as well. So keep an eye on St. Joe's. So matchups again, Cabrillo, St. Joe's, Division II, and Bakersfield Christian Long Polk. Let's move to Division III. Kingsburg took care of Mission Oak 8-1. So again, we mentioned the Jensen Hirschcorn went six innings, struck out six. We'll be talking with Pops Oscar at 11 o'clock. They're going to be taking on Pioneer Valley, who beat Washington Union 8-3. Dinuba beat Independence 8-7. They're going to be moving on to play Dos Palos. Go Broncos. The number two seed of Broncos beat Mount Whitney 3-2. It was a 2-0 game. Dos Palos responded with three runs. So Dinuba, Dos Palos at the bottom of the bracket, Division III, Kingsburg, Pioneer Valley. Division IV, Liberty Madera. They got a really, really strong team, overwhelming, number one seed, overwhelming favorite, I should say, beat Wasco 14-2. They're going to be taking on Hoover. We're going to be talking with David Jones at the bottom of hour number two, beat Madera South 9-2. Emmanuel, the three seed, defeated Golden West 6-2. Those guys are rolling. Coach Steve Ramirez in his first year at the helm is doing a fantastic job. Won their first two playoff games, shut out Minarets in game one. They're going to be taking on Reedley, the 7 seed. They beat Arvin, the 2 seed, on the road 2-1. That's going to set up a early in the season. And, you know, Emmanuel's in Reedley. And Reedley doesn't like Emmanuel very much. But, it's going to be a highly intense game. They met in the regular season as actually a crossover game, and it was a raucous crowd, man. It was high energy, and so I imagine it's going to be that and then some. So Emmanuel and Reedley, bottom of the bracket, Liberty and Hoover at the top of the bracket. That is Division IV. Division V, Chavez is going to be playing East Bakersfield. East Bakersfield, Division V with well over 2,000 kids. Well, students, I should say. That's not time for another discussion, but anyway, Chavez and East Bakersfield and Menachie 11 seed is going to be taken on Fireball. In Division 6, Orange Cove, the 8 seed, beat Shafter 5-0. They're going to be taking on Torres, and Woodlake is going to be playing Kern Valley. We're going to hit a break in just a second, but I do need to mention a couple things really quick. Coach Mike Noel is going to be coming on at 10. They're going to be talking about Division 1 softball playoffs, and again, Gabe Camarillo after the break for a few short minutes. Huge upset. I mean, I am absolutely shocked. Clovis North, number one seed, lost to Stockdale 8-7. Huge surprise. I when I saw that score on Max Preps, I actually had to do a double take. I'm like, what in the world? How did that happen? We know the season that Clovis North has had. At one time, they were undefeated, ranked number one in the state by Max Preps and SB Live. And they lost. They went down. They even had a 4-0 lead with Ryan Maddox on the mound. And I heard there were a couple miscues defensively, and playoffs, baseball, softball, things can get really, really tight, and the little things matter. And yeah, they went down. So Clovis North falls in Division One, and a huge upset in that one. All right, want to mention one more thing before we hit the break. It's never too early to talk about football, right? And actually, there's spring practices happening right now. I know I was able to from a distance, see that the Buchanan football team was practicing. So football practices are happening all over. I want to mention Clovis West. So we know what they did last year. Had an incredible year, 10-1, was undefeated before they actually 10-2. So they lost to Central in track, and then they lost in the playoffs to San Joaquin Memorial. But they're returning three special wide receivers. How special? Well, these guys are all have Division I offers. Marshall Sanders, JoJo Pierre, Landon Wright, all offered by Fresno State as well. A lot of them have multiple offers. Having one Division I wide receiver is great. Having two is phenomenal. But having three, God, those guys are going to put up a lot of points this year. It's going to be really exciting. So never too early to talk about football. And Clovis West is definitely going to be a team we're going to have our eyes on, going to be talking about a lot. All right, enough of the opener. We're going to be talking with Gabe Camarillo after break about what he saw this week in baseball, some of the upsets. We're going to be talking with Gabe, the host of Home Field Advantage, after break on 1430 ESPN.
The Central Valley Sports Report starts now.
Thank you guys for listening. Central Valley Sports Report, 1430 ESPN. I'm your host, Paul Metters. You can follow me on the Twitter machine, at Paul Meadors, PaulMeadors. We have a ton of fun, guys, bringing you all the great high school action up and down the Central Valley. Gabe Camarillo does a fantastic job. You know him from Home Field Advantage, Monday through Thursday, 3 to 5. He's a fantastic follow on Twitter, does a great job retweeting or tweeting out highlights and getting information out there. And he's my partner in crime. We were able to hang out yesterday at the Buchanan and baseball game against Rigetti. So, Gabe, what's going on, my friend? I know you've had a huge, busy week, right? Like, you went to D.C. on a flight, and
yes.
you're just trying to catch up. Your body's trying to catch up with your mind a little bit.
Well, that's one way to put it. I told it to you yesterday, and I sounded a lot worse than I did. I sounded a lot worse yesterday than I did today. My voice went away. I don't know why. I think I might have left it in D.C.
Well, that's literally your job, right? Is talking is your job. So, yeah, thanks for coming on, as always. Buchanan and Rigetti, we know what happened to Buchanan last year, right? The huge upset. They had a senior-laden team, lost in the first round. This year's team's been different. A lot of young kids have been thrown into the fire. They've responded with two shutouts, two complete game shutouts. It was a tight one. You know, baseball playoffs can be very, very tight. The little things certainly matter. You know, what stood out to you in yesterday's ball game?
Rigetti was by far the more experienced team. A lot of the team that we saw in Rigetti yesterday were also there in that same dugout 2 years ago when Rigetti was a 16 seed. They were young. They were obviously, I think, had like a sub 500 record. Some even questioned why they were in the playoffs to begin with. And they also led Buchanan, the number one seed, going into the bottom of the seventh. And they lost that game. Remember, Sky Collins hit that walk-off home run. So Rigetti was the more experienced team compared to Buchanan, which, you know, I think Colin O'Toole mentioned it to me post-game. They have some seniors that really step up, himself included, J.P. Acosta, but they also rely a lot on underclassmen. The freshman, Austin Finnegan, who hit a solo home run to left field that provided some much-needed insurance. You have Peyton Barsotti behind the plate, only a sophomore, with two clutch hits, including a double that kind of led to the Buchanan Bears' first run. Even the freshman pinch runner, Zach Williams, his speed, they needed every second of his 90-feet time, because remember that throw at the I think at the bottom of the fifth inning it was. After Barsotti doubled, Williams comes in to pinch runs. He gets over to third on a bunt, and then Acosta is able to sky a sac fly to left field that was caught and then missiled towards home plate. I thought it was a great throw. I thought that was going to beat him, to be honest, but the freshman Williams able to squeeze in and get his hand just ahead of the tag, and I mean just ahead of the tag. That showed you that this Buchanan Bears team isn't just all about the veterans. They definitely are a huge part of it, and I think we'll see more veterans step up throughout the postseason. Braden Gentz, outstanding this past Wednesday it was, with his complete game shutout against Arroyo Grande. They're going to need him to step up this upcoming Tuesday against Stockdale. So you have the seniors that have stepped up, but really the story of this Buchanan Bears season is it's been everybody, underclassmen or not, doing their role. Tyler O'Toole, the designated hitter, he's been a big part of this season, but he also was able to handle losing a second base job. I think they were working with him at second base, and they decided to give it to a senior, Adrian Castaneda. Castaneda had some clutch at-bats yesterday. The selflessness of this team is what I'm trying to say, Paul. They're selfless. They don't care what their role is. They just want any role to try and lead Buchanan Bears to another Central Section title.
They'll be facing the Stockdale team that's, they are obviously lost Austin Charles to the draft, and Austin Charles is having a great season in his first season in the pros. They got a dude, Fetterston. He is a strong pitcher, and I heard Coach Greg Showers from Stockdale talking to your show. He's like, hey, I'll put Fetterston up against anybody in the Central Section as far as pitchers go. I know there's a dude we're going to talk about in just a second, Joey Volsko for Redwood, but, hey, that's going to be no small task for the Bears.
Well, I think Coach Fonts told us both yesterday, the good thing about Fetterston is he's a right-hander. So, the thing about Buchanan, the reason why they kind of struggled at the plate yesterday, and you look at the final box score, Rigetti had double the hits of Buchanan. Rigetti with 8 hits, Buchanan with 4 hits. I think part of that had to do with the left-hander for Rigetti, Ricky Smith, a good pitcher yesterday, not yesterday, but last year, he was the league's MVP. Yesterday, he looked like the league's MVP as well, with 5 1/3 innings, only allowing 3 hits, I believe, only 2 earned runs. I feel like for Rigetti, they did everything right, but Buchanan still find a way to win. Besides the base running for Rigetti. The base running for Rigetti was a little questionable, but besides that, Rigetti kind of did what they were supposed to do. They hit the ball hard. For the most part, they played good defense, but Buchanan still found a way to win. So if you're Stockdale, you're looking at this game, Buchanan winning 2-0 over Rigetti. Rigetti probably had the better offensive day, but Buchanan still won. And that should worry you if you're Stockdale, because Buchanan seems to find a way to win these games.
They do. And at the top of the bracket, Gabe, I was surprised we were listening to Gonzo and Mike Brink on the call, but Bullard goes down to Centennial, and you know, we talked about in the opener, Bullard had that 22-game winning streak. They weren't really challenged very much in the CMAC. Playoffs are different, and they got down early. They weren't able to recuperate. I was very, very, very shocked to see that score.
Yeah, well, I mean, I'm not going to say I told you so, but I have alarmed everybody about Buchanan's strength of schedule. And, you know, everyone was telling me they still faced good teams in the non-league. Yes, that's true. They obviously beat Bakersfield Christian, which is a favorite to win Division II, and they beat Redwood, which is still in the tournament. But I think at the end of the day, you look at the four teams that are currently still alive, two of them are from the same league, the River League and Bakersfield, Centennial and Stockdale. Other two, Buchanan and Redwood. I mean, Redwood's an exception because Redwood is just so good. They're so talented, and they have two Division I arms. I feel like despite their weaker league, they still have two Division I arms. I think you can beat anyone in the Valley with two Division I arms like Redwood has. Buchanan's from the track. They're all battle-tested or supremely talented. Now, Bullard was supremely talented except for one area, and I feel like that was exposed yesterday, and that was pitching depth. Sam Reynolds had a fantastic season, but unfortunately for him, he found a good lineup for Centennial. I mean, we saw the Centennial team put up 16 runs on Tulare Western and still lose. So you thought, okay, maybe the pitching for Centennial would be their weakness. Maybe we're going to see a slugfest on Mike Noakes Field. Not the case. It was a great performance for a Centennial starter. It was just overall a day where Centennial did everything right and Bullard left guys on base. And that happens. It had baseball. It's a one-game playoff. And unfortunately for the Bullard Knights, a fantastic season, something that the seniors should be proud of, a long winning streak. I heard you mention it. It was 22, 23 games. It's over. And at the end of the day, what are they going to remember more, right? The long winning streak or them losing in the quarterfinals? I hate to say it might be the quarterfinals, and that's not right. I feel like they should still be proud of the season that they had.
And I know for sure that, Bullard had – Valley Championship aspirations, at least get to the game. And hey, I've been touting Redwood since for a while, Gabe, and I went on record saying I think they're going to win the Central Section title. Now they're set up, so they go with Joey Volchko, the Stanford commit, potential first or second round draft pick in the MLB draft. They went with him in the opener against San Luis Obispo. They won 14-1, and they let him throw all seven innings. A little surprised by that. But obviously you can't predict that Bullard's going to lose. So I think Coach's reasoning was, hey, Salt Vochko, hey, you know, hopefully we could get to the semifinals. If we face Bullard at Bullard, I'm going to go Vochko and Cam Snyder. But, hey, so Vochko's going to go most likely against Centennial. And that could set up, you know, a potential championship game against either Stockdale or Buchanan. But hey, I'm all for it, man. Division I playoffs are definitely a very solid group of teams this year. Any other scores surprise you throughout the other divisions, Gabe?
I won't say they surprised me, but they stood out to me. Division II, it's the Central Coast Invitational, and Bakersfield Christian's included. You have Bakersfield Christian going up against Lompoc, and then you have Cabrillo versus St. Joseph. I like what you said earlier about Kerman. How is it that they always find a way to get the short end of the stick with these playoff brackets? Last year, they were the one seed in Division II. Maybe the CAF felt bad about that because then they gave them the two seed in Division II. I don't understand. Kerman's a very good Division III team. I know that their head coach had a good team this year, and he was telling me, you know, Gabe, they're having us projected at the 5 seed in Division II. Maybe we're a Division III team. That's okay to say that. It's okay to say you're a Division III team if you're based in Division III. And it's okay to say if you are, I mean, El Diamante's not going to complain because El Diamante beat Clovis. But if you're like an LD or a Madera or a Hanford, it's okay to say, hey, we're a Division II team. We shouldn't be playing a Division I. It's not showing a lack of competitiveness. It's showing a wealth of self-awareness. You're aware of where you're at. You're aware of how good your team is and who they can beat and who they cannot beat. At the end of the day, when it comes to the whole playoff bracket conversation, we should ask ourselves, are we trying to create the most competitive playoffs? Or are we trying to put teams in a position to win Central Section championships? I feel like – go ahead.
Yeah, I know. Yeah, so Kerman, they did have home games, right? And I know they had some injury as well. So the two seed, it's set up you know, for them to have the advantage, but running into St. Joseph's again was just, I don't know.
Bad luck.
It was hard. It was hard
yes.
to stomach.
St. Joseph was better than a 7 seed. And you know what? I'll say this again. Clovis East was better than a 10 seed. Those two teams, it was a 9-inning game between Clovis East and St. Joe's. Maybe those two teams should not have faced each other in the first round. I'll just say that. But at the end of the day, it's like, are these games competitive? For the most part, I've said they are. Yeah. I mean, there's been some blowouts in Division I, but I feel like that always happens when you have a clear creme de la creme. You know, the top six, I've said, have been the top six for a while. But I would say if this was made to create competitive games, it has done that, but it's also alienated some of those fringe D1, D2 teams that always tend to find themselves on the wrong side of the bubble.
Yeah, good job by you, my friend. It's been a fun ride so far. We got another couple weeks of baseball and softball coming at us. So I'll see you soon.
All right, Paul. See you next week.
You bet. All right. Coming up after the break, we got Mike Noel, the Clovis softball coach, defending D1 champs. After the break on 1430 ESPN.
The Central Valley Sports Report starts now.
Welcome back. Central Valley Sports Report. I'm your host, Paul Metters. Here with Mike Noel, Clovis softball coach, defending D1 champs. 9 total Central Section championships for Coach Noel. Part of the Clovis West Hall of Fame. Played baseball at Fresno State. I remember you, obviously, in high school, reading your name in the Fresno League. And then when you went to Fresno State, I was like, oh, yeah, Mike Noel. All right, you went to Fresno State. That's awesome. Cougars are still alive and well. Traveled to number 2 Central on Tuesday. Beat Buchanan 3-0. Hi, Mike. How you doing?
I'm doing great. It's great to be here.
It's awesome to be here. So we're off air. We're talking about rings, right? So he's won 9, so 9 rings. We're just talking about how they just get bigger, right? Like, you know, 96 was your first one, and it's probably just a nice size. Might probably looks like a class ring, and then you just get exponentially bigger, don't they?
You do, and it's kind of the way things are. You look at the professional sports, and those things are humongous.
Yeah.
So, you know, you just, to me, I don't wear them, so I want something that I can set on a shelf and be proud about, and the bigger the better.
Yeah, and they're more display pieces now. You're not wearing those things in public, right? You're just displaying them, and you look at them every once in a while. It's a different outfit. Or do you have a real say in how those are designed, or do you give them to the girls, and they're like, hey, let's go with this?
Definitely the girls design what they want, the sayings they want on it, what they stone, that type of thing. I certainly try to lead them certain ways to make sure everything's, you know, the way it should be. But no, they certainly have carte blanche what they want.
Oh, they know what they want. Yeah. Absolutely. You probably see mock-ups all the time. Coach, let's go with this. Let's go with that. It's good to be still playing softball at this time of the year, isn't it, Mike? And, you know, your girls went through a little bit of a tough stretch. We'll get to that in just a second. But you guys were able to beat Buchanan 3-0, a familiar foe. So what was working in that playoff game?
Well, it starts in the circle, and Emma Swinson was really good for us. You know, she's had a phenomenal year. She started off, and she, you know, we're real young, very inexperienced, and she kept us in every game, gave us a shot to win, and we were winning a lot of games. When you get to track, it's a completely different animal, and you know, for us to go 4-1 in the first round, we were really excited about that and feeling really good where we were. But again, it's still the track, and you have to show up every game. And the second half was tough for us. We weren't doing some of the things we were doing earlier, and obviously it hurt us. But to the girls' credit, you know, we got to the playoffs and we got a 3 seed. I was a little surprised at that. We certainly backed into that. But, you know, once you get in there, there's certain things that need to be done, and I thought our girls did a fantastic job of doing those.
Well, that stretch that you're talking about, right, you went 4-1 in the first round and played Clovis North really tough. I was able to watch that game, and you guys were right there. Lost 4 out of 5. You know, as a coach, and talking to you and your staff, how are you guys able to approach that? Obviously, you got to know your kids as well as anybody. Do you get a little bit harder on them? Do you ease up? Do you try to loosen things up? Like, how do you approach when you're in a tough stretch like that?
Well, this team has been different than most of our teams because we were so inexperienced. I think we returned 2 or 3 girls who played last year and were a part of the on the game for the Valley Champion. We've coached them a lot lighter than we normally do. Usually we're, you know, our practices are very high paced and very pressured to prepare them for these situations we're in now. But this team, we've really tried to be patient and let them, you know, develop as the season goes on, and know they're going to have times where they're something new for them, and take the struggles and try to learn from them. And they've done a fantastic job of that. So we just sort of kept with that. And, you know, when the playoff comes along, it's a whole new season. We could talk about chapters of a season, and it's a whole new chapter. And, you know, they went out on Thursday and did what they're supposed to do and what they can do.
Talking with Clovis softball coach Mike Noel. Yeah, I want to explore that a little bit more with you, Mike. Like, you know, I've seen some of your phenomenal teams, and, man, those teams, when they're really humming, they are absolutely humming. You could see it on the field, just the confidence they play with. They know their roles on the team. When you have a new team, like you said, where you got to ease up a little bit, they're not used to it, and, you know, how are you able to do that throughout the season, right? Are there just certain practices where you're like, hey, we're going to go hard on them this practice? Or maybe there's something that pops up in practice that you just get really fired up about. Like, girls, we got to do it this, we got it this way. Or back up a little bit, hey, need to do it this way. You know what I mean?
Well, again, it depends on the team. But our practices are generally really tough. We want to make it pressured. We do what we call one-inning games, where – they're playing a game. Our pitcher's throwing all out, and our hitter, they have a chore to do, whether there's a runner at second and move them over, or a runner at third with two strikes and you're trying to drive them in. But every drill we do, we try to make it as pressured as possible. And we're after them because we think that's what's best for them personally and as a team. But this year, we've tried to lighten that load a little bit. Just because of we knew there was going to be some growing pains, and we just really thought the girls responded well to who they are and what they needed to do as a team to be successful. And, you know, it's a year by year thing. We certainly have a standard that we like to keep, but in terms of how hard we're going to go after the teams, it just depends.
And you guys have a big one on Tuesday, right? 4:30 at Central. You'll be taking on the Grizzlies, who you split with. The last game, was it an 11-0 game? Hate to bring that up, but right? I mean, it's the reality of it. So what is like the simple scouting report on Central?
Well, they're always well coached. They're always a team that you have to stay in the fight, because they certainly are. They are a 1-9 lineup, and they have a couple girls off the bench that can then hurt you too. So there's not a let up in the lineup. You got to go out every at bat and focus and be ready to go. They do a lot of things well, and we know that, so we'll be prepared for it. But they're a very, very good ball club.
And I mentioned earlier, and that Clovis North was upset 8-7. You know, we know what a talented team they were, but you mentioned how to try to replicate the playoff atmospheres in practice. You mentioned doing that one inning game, which is awesome, but playoffs are a different animal, right? So how are you able to, you know, maybe teach the girls the mental part when things aren't going their way? Maybe, you know, there's a high pressure situation, or you need a double play to get out of the inning, or a strikeout. Like, how are you mentally able to prepare the girls for those high pressure situations in those moments?
Well, I think the biggest thing is you don't start doing that in May. We started in January with, like I said, our practices. We think that the team that makes playoffs the most normal are the teams that usually go the farthest. If you're the team that gets up for playoffs, it doesn't always work out for you. Sometimes you just have the best teams, and you could show up walking on your hands,
roll
and you'll be
out.
Fine. But we feel like it starts in January, and, you know, if May rolls around and it feels normal to the girls, you got a good shot. And I think that's the key.
You've had some teams that have been dominant all season. And I remember the Danielle Lung days, and you know, like a team like this, where you got to grind a little bit more, where they're a little more inexperienced. What is the difference between being the hunted or being the hunter, right? Being a team that, you know, you're going to get your best shot every time. You guys are the top dog. Everyone wants to, even if they beat in the regular season, they're whooping it up pretty good. As opposed to like, hey, there's some teams we know, higher seeds, a little bit better than us. We're going to have to grind a little bit more, as opposed to hunting them.
Well, I think if you're the hunted, it's sort of a double-edged sword. You're the hunted because you're the best team. And, you know, that's a good feeling. But there is also that pressure that you know, if you're the best team, you should go out and be the best team. Being the hunter is maybe a little more fun because people, you know, anytime you can silence your doubters, that's a good thing. We've had years, we had back-to-back years. I don't remember what years it were, probably mid-2008 or 9 maybe, where we were the 8th seed and we beat the 1 seed, and we were the 9 seed the next year and beat the 1 seed. And that's exciting for the kids. You know, I think they enjoy that part of it, that challenge. But I mean, if I had my choice, I'd want to be the hunted, because that meant we played well the entire year and deserved that. So that would be my choice.
We've talked about this, Mike, you know, since we've known each other, differences between softball and baseball. You're obviously a baseball player, played at Fresno State. For those people out there who are like, you know, softball is a, you know, it's different than baseball in the sense that it might not be as exciting. Hey, I would argue that, you know, till my dying day, softball, high level softball is super exciting. From your perspective, from a coaching perspective, what might be some different nuances between coaching a softball game as opposed to coaching a baseball game?
Well, I say this all the time. The best and the worst thing about coaching softball is that every single little thing matters. Because our game is the bases are closer and the pitcher's closer, you make that one error, it doesn't matter who you are, that could be the ball game. Baseball's a little different because of – you know, that it takes so much to score runs. But ours, it's just, you know, they're so close. It seems like you get that one little single and all heck can break loose real quick. And I think that, again, that's what's so great about our game. It's so fast. Every little thing, bang, bang plays. If you haven't been to a good softball game, you're missing out. And I have people all the time say, this is our first game, and boy, it was something. We'll come to everything. We love this. I love baseball. From as long as I can remember, but it's not as exciting. You know, softball is just, everything about it is so fast paced, and it's a great game to be at.
I know. You know, from watching high level softball games, when things are humming, when the pitches are on point, I mean, it is definitely fun to see. I mean, even getting the ball back from the catcher, right? I mean, the catcher's humming it back. There's no lobbing the ball back to the pitcher at all, right? The catchers are humming it back to the pitcher. You're on top of the rubber and you're getting after it. And heck, still to this day, when I see that third baseman charging in bunt situations, I get scared. I'm like, man, don't slap one down there because somebody could get really hurt. That's why they wear masks sometimes. But, guys, seriously, man, high-level softball is a lot of fun to watch. And two, I think, Mike, being a baseball guy, you can relate because maybe back in your day you probably thought the same thing. But you're like, hey, that softball pitcher, man, I could take that pitcher deep anytime. No problem. God, look at this. Fences are shorter. If a really good baseball team were to step into the box against a high-level softball pitcher, how would they look?
in a word, terrible. It's if you go in there thinking you're just going to do what you do on a baseball field, you don't have a chance. You know, it's so much closer. Your timing would be completely different. They're throwing a rise ball, which you don't see in the baseball world. And then once you gear up for that, they throw a changeup and you end up looking really silly. There's a famous clip. It's on YouTube. You can find it all over the place of Jenny Finch, sort of the face of softball for a long, long time, facing Albert Pujols. And, mm-hmm. and I think that's a perfect example of what it would look like.
She made him look silly.
Yes.
I think it was at an all-star game. It was. And all the all-stars are all around, and they're just laughing at him.
Yeah.
Like, he's flailing. He's got no shot.
I mean, you might eventually – understand what's going on and change your swing a little bit and get it going, but it would be embarrassing.
What's the most intense game you've ever coached in? Like one that, like, maybe even, you know, made your stomach turn your stomach into knots.
Right. I don't know about nerve-wise, but probably the most exciting one was our 2015 championship game against Central. A lot of different circumstances. They were building our snack bar bathroom, so the whole third base side was closed down. So the stands were completely packed. Down the right field line was completely packed. Our football team came after spring football, and they were lined on the outfield fence, and it just seemed like everybody was on top of us. And then, of course, we hadn't been in a Valley Championship since 2007, so it was a big deal that we were there, and we were playing one of our rivals, Central. So it was just – the whole thing about it was just exciting and just a big moment. And, of course, when you come out on top, you remember that even more. So that was probably it.
And yeah, I remember that game. I was at that game. What would that be? What, 2-1?
2-0.
2-0. 2-0 game. Yeah, it was exciting. That was definitely a big celebration. Like, yeah, there was a big, pretty big gap between getting those rings.
Yes. Yes.
How about the most craziest, most intense game you've ever played in?
If I had to pinpoint one, I would say it was the regional my senior year at Biden Field against Northridge to get to the College World Series. We had to beat them twice. The crowd, that's back when Fresno State games, I mean, the crowd, it was packed. You could play a Tuesday night throwaway game and it was packed. They had to open up the outfield, and Vince Weston and his whole crew was sitting behind me and just ragging on their center fielder and loving on me. It was just a great time, and we came from behind and had a walk-off win. Todd Johnson drove in me for the tying run and Phil Romero for the winning run, and that got us to the College World Series. I think that was probably, just because of the circumstances and the atmosphere, was probably the game that sticks out.
How'd you celebrate after that win? You remember? You guys jumping up? Was there a dog pile?
There was definitely a dog pile. Yes, for sure.
Were you at the bottom? Were you jumping on the top, or do you remember?
I don't remember that part of it, but, you know, knowing my teammates, it was probably pretty wild.
I had Tom Goodwin on the show a couple months ago, and he came in for the alumni game, and you played right next to him. And, I mean, what a guy. And he definitely said, you know, told me to send his love to you. And, you know, I know he said, man, Noel was my guy, man. I love that guy to death. And, I mean, what just an eclectic group of guys that you played with. But you got any fun Tom Goodwin stories? Obviously his speed, and you had speed too. And I mean, you got any fun stories about Goody?
You know, there's a lot. He's just such a great human being, so funny and just so down to earth. I mean, you would never know in talking to him how phenomenal of athlete he really was in any sport he played. I think the thing that sticks out in my mind is just the opportunity he gave me. I mean, obviously Coach Bennett, my sophomore year, put me in the lineup, but, you know, hitting second behind Tom Goodwin, you don't have to do a whole lot to be doing well, because he's on second or third every single at bat. So I literally could hit a 52 hopper to the second baseman with no outs, move him to third, and I was a hero. So I think he really allowed me to sort of settle in as a college baseball player and feel like I belonged. And you know, our outfield was him and Hosey and me, and you know, I was just trying to survive, and they were really great to me. But Goody's just a fantastic person. He's, you know, I remember when he went off to the minor leagues, he came back and gave me batting gloves and things. He just always seemed to know when to say something or do something to make you feel like you belonged in his realm. And I've always had a soft spot in my heart for him. He's just a great kid.
Did you ever call him off? Like, there's a fly ball in the gap. You're like, I am taking this one, Goody.
I'm sure he got there before I did, so I probably never had to. But, you know, he was a great guy to play with.
He is a great guy. All right, Coach Mike Noel, we got a couple more minutes here. What does Clovis softball have to do to not only beat Central but to win a Central section title this season?
Well, I don't want to give too much away, but, you know, I think we got to play Clovis softball, and I think if you know, you know. We have to do the sort of things that make us successful, and it starts with pitching and playing good defense and showing up willing to do the little things. And, you know, a lot of teams have to do that too. But that's sort of what we've always done, just being willing to do what needs to be done, playing winning softball.
And, you know, Mike, the times that I've been around you, you've just been a great friend and always willing to talk and gain insight into all my silly questions that I have for you at times. So I really appreciate you. I appreciate your friendship, and good luck the rest of the way.
I appreciate it anytime.
All right. Thanks, Mike. That was Mike Noel, head softball coach at Clovis High. They're going to be taking on Central on Tuesday at 4:30 as the 3 seed. Central is the 2 seed. And, yeah, if you guys haven't seen high-level softball, I highly recommend it. Highly recommend it. It is a lot of fun. It's definitely a treat to see. So coming up after the break, you're sticking with baseball. Talking baseball, Oscar Hirschhorn, Fresno Pacific men's head coach, is coming on board on 1430 ESPN.
In a world where high school sports don't exist. Wait, no. We don't like that world. Different world, please. Ah, that's better. The Central Valley Sports Report starts now.
This is hour number two of the Central Valley Sports Report, 1430 ESPN. I'm your host, Paul Metters. Here at First String Sports. Check them out, Blackstone Avenue in between Sierra and Herndon. Just had a really good conversation with softball coach Mike Noel of Clovis High. I mean, Mike, he downplays so much in his own playing career. The guy was one of the greatest athletes in Clovis West history, football and baseball. Was the only baseball player in Fresno State history to play in two College World Series. And so, you know, he's done a phenomenal job with Clovis softball. They're a dynasty. And, you know, the insights that Mike has into softball in general are amazing. He's the best of the best, in my opinion. Got another good guy here, Oscar Hirschhorn, Fresno Pacific men's or baseball. I shouldn't say men's, right? Baseball coach. He's the only coach in program history. Got those back-to-back national titles in 14 and 15. Chico State, 1997, national champions, huh?
Yeah.
Did my research on you. There it is right there. Graduate from Kerman High. You know, talked about his sons at Kingsburg High. We'll get into that a little bit, but Oscar, what's going on? Thanks for driving from Kingsburg all the way up here to Fresno to be on the show live.
No, I appreciate it. It's an honor to be on, and thank you for having me and all that you do.
What's a normal Saturday? So your season ended last year. We're going to get into that a little bit, but what's a normal Saturday in the life of a Hirschhorn?
Oh, for me, yeah. For my boys, it's always busy with their sports, their teams, whatever they're doing. But for me, it's like, for instance, today I have a recruit in. So after the show, I'll go and do that. That's this time of year. Recruiting never really stops, but in the D2 world, it's this is a heavy time. It'll be pretty busy until through June for sure, into July, and then it'll start to slow down a little bit there. So
a little bit, said slow down a little bit. I we're definitely going to talk about Fresno Pacific and all the great things that are happening over there. But Kingsburg, right? Kingsburg baseball keeps winning, and your boys are a big part of it. Twins Houston and Holden, they were on the show, and they did a phenomenal job here. Just well-spoken young man. Young Jensen gets on the mound, 6 foot, all 6 foot five, and, you know, big old long arms, right, slinging it up there. So pitched six innings and struck out six. So, you know, when, you know, I know your time, you know, as a baseball coach takes up a lot of your time. But, you know, when you're able to watch your boys play and, you know, see highlights and hear people talk about them, you know, how much does your chest puff up when you think about your sons and what they're able to accomplish?
Well, I'm proud of them. I mean, probably like any dad, you know, with their kids, I'm proud of mine. They're mine.
Yeah.
But I'm the proudest of who they are as people. They're, you know, I married the best lady in the world, and she's the greatest mom, and she gets all the credit. She's
the better athlete,
the better athlete, sure. and the reason that they have high character, and, you know, we all make mistakes and things like that, but I am proud of them and who they are, and they're good teammates, and that's what they need to be, and they work hard. They have work ethic, and those are the things that we're concerned about.
So, you know, high profile sons, right? And, you know, the sons of a high profile coach, there could be a little bit of pressure, right? So how are some of the things that you and your wife Tricia, has been able to instill in your sons about taking some of the pressure and just enjoying the game? Are there some specific things that you've tried to instill in them?
For pressure, I mean, like so many people have said, pressure is a privilege in any way. So because there must be expectation if you're feeling some pressure and all the, you know, all the little different ways of looking at things like that. But, you know, I think if they concentrate on the right things, and I would tell that to my players at Fresno Pacific, if you're concentrating on being the best player that you can be and best teammate, it kind of takes care of itself, because the game is going to need what the game needs from you, and it's your job to be in a position and ready both mentally and physically to give the game what it needs. So that's what you need to try to prepare for, and if you're prepared, you start to feel less pressure. I think pressure ramps up when you're not prepared. Then you start to have to hope, and we don't want to play baseball or any sport hoping we do good, you know.
Preparation's huge. I know we talked to tons of coaches, and especially playoff situations, things get a lot tighter. You guys were able to host the PacWest Championships last week. Definitely going to talk about the facilities, because I've seen pictures and they're absolutely phenomenal. It's beautiful field there. How would you summarize your season as a whole? 24-23, I believe. You know, ups and downs, and you know, I mean, the things that when you're coaching young men, the things that you go through.
Yeah, the season was mixed. We gave away a lot of games early. I was proud of this group, and I really will always have fond memories of this team, because they didn't give up, and therefore, with six games to go, we were in first place. And we were actually in first place, I think, at the end of the season for three weekends in a row. It was at least two, but I think it was three. And then we coughed it up in the last six, not for lack of effort or anything like that. And then, you know, the conference tournament was a success in that we were hosting it and it was run well. It was run well in all areas. Our administration and the guys working grounds did such a phenomenal job. We were disappointed as a team. We had a good game against Azusa Pacific in the opening game, and we lost 6-4, and then they ended up winning it. Won the second game, and then we just came up short in the last game. So in that regard, it was disappointing, but we have a lot of guys back and really excited about the future. We have some really good players in the program and working hard to add more.
Yeah, hitting the recruiting trail, yeah. Right? Talking with Oscar Hirschhorn, head baseball coach at Fresno Pacific. What I love to do, Oscar, throughout the season, I'll occasionally check your stats, right? And I'll say, oh, yeah, remember this kid from Clovis North. I remember this kid from Buchanan or Clovis East. And so that's always a lot of fun for me to see these kids in high school and then watch them at the next level. And I know Garrett Cooper has been a dude for you for the last – this was his final season,
yeah,
right? Garrett Cooper. I remember him, you know, Kingsburg, then transferred to Clovis North, and I'm like, yeah, this kid's a player. But he pitched really, really well for you over the last few years, didn't he?
He did. He was a phenomenal – in fact, he was the conference pitcher of the year. And I guess I should talk about that in regards to answering how the season was. We had the preseason pitcher of the year, which was Justin Fusen. And then at the end of the season, we had the conference pitcher of the year, the one that actually did it through that season, which was Garrett Cooper. And then we had the defensive player of the year, Jordan Smith. And we had a guy that was in the top three for conference player of the year. So we had a lot of great individual players, specifically to Garrett Cooper. He was a great, great player for Fresno Pacific, and really proud of him. He's such a great athlete. And if you know him, or if you were following him growing up, he really could do anything. In fact, this is a bit of a silly story, but I meant it when I told him. I actually had a goal of playing him in a game all nine spots, because he really could do it. He actually, I believe, had starts at every position in his career at Fresno Pacific except for catcher. So, and he could have done that too.
Well, when I watched him play, obviously Riley, his brother, is at LSU. He was more of the pitcher in high school. He was a big lefty, and Garrett was a shortstop. I'm like, this guy's going to be a shortstop at the next level, but he turned out to be a great pitcher.
Yeah, he really did. I always tell him, and he I think he believes me, but the moment I knew I wanted him, he was probably 13 years old. And I had taken my sons to youth basketball on a Saturday. And I had always heard about the Coopers and you know, through the Little League fame. And anyway, this kid just flies into the gym. You know, it's a mess between hours, right? You've got different age groups coming in, going out, all the things. And this little guy just flies in there, grabs a ball, does a reverse layup, and I thought, who is this? Anyways, it was Garrett. And I tell him that all the time because that's true. I thought, I've got to watch this. Because we all coaches want athletes. And, you know, sure enough, they moved from Kingsburg to Clovis North when Garrett was a senior. And I know that had to be a challenge, but that was also something that stood out to me, that he was able to handle that transition well and stop. And I believe in the Easter Classic, I think he was the player of the tournament. Really proud of myself for my memory right now.
You're doing great. You're doing awesome.
but Garrett, he performed his freshman year. I believe he started most of the games at short, but he also was in the rotation. And then as the years went by, he became so valuable as a pitcher. We ended up trying to minimize his position playing time, because his velocity would stay up when we did that. And when his velocity was up, his pitchability is so great, but when his velocity was up, he could beat anybody. And he did.
Definitely the slider build of the two brothers.
Yeah.
It's almost polar opposite, right? Riley's the big lefty with now the big hair. And then Garrett, you know, he's slight right-handed.
Yeah. Yeah. although Garrett's, he's one of those guys that you don't know how muscle-bound
he is. All right,
one of
those guys,
until,
all right.
Yeah, until, you know, he wears a tight shirt or whatever, takes a shirt off, or he's flexing in the mirror, I don't know.
We're talking with Oscar Hirschkorn, Fresno Pacific baseball coach. All right, so, Coach, what, you know, you obviously scour the valley, and again, I mentioned it, like, I love looking at the stats, and like, oh, yeah, I remember that guy or that guy. So when you're recruiting players, when you're looking at guys, you're looking at athletes, like you said with Garrett, but what type of player are you specifically looking for? Say you show up to a game, you're like, yeah, I like that kid.
Well, you're always looking for athletes first. I do like versatility. It's not that we force versatility, but it gives you a chance to have a stronger roster when you can move guys around. And then, you know, big league baseball, I love how it's kind of evolved, where it was just in a conversation a couple days ago about this, but in the old days, if you were considered a utility player, it was kind of like the kiss of death for your career.
Yeah.
And then now, it's the opposite. It's if you're versatile, teams and, celebrate that value. And then, you know, so you're always watching ability. That's what's going to draw your eyes first. But then you're watching the things that matter in the long run, which is, are you a good teammate? How's your behavior? How do you handle competition? Are you a winner? And that question's such a fascinating one, because nobody wins every moment. But winners tend to find a way to improve if they come up short. And it's a self-motivating thing. They're gonna fix it. They're a little less self-reliant, or a little less reliant on other people, and a little more self-reliant. They've got that resiliency. And I know that sounds maybe foolish, that you can see some of that stuff from the stands, but you'd be surprised how much you can see from the stands. And then you walk around a little bit, and I actually tend to not. I kind of like to be incognito when I go watch things, because I don't, you know, you do both. Sometimes you go out advertising the Fresno Pacific gear, and sometimes you go out with not doing that on purpose. And you kind of want to hear how they talk when they don't think anybody's watching, and how they move, and are their eyes in the stands, or is it in competition? Are they in the moment or not? You know, just this, things like that add up. That, I guess that's the best way I can say it. All these little things add up to, man, should we, to answer the question, should we make an investment in this player? Because it's 4 years. Because the way we do it, I don't want somebody for 1 year. That's not what we're trying to do. We we want a commitment from them, and in return, we're going to make a commitment back. We're going to reciprocate. So it's a bit of a marriage there for a time, and you know, it's wisdom to know who you're marrying, right? Yeah, you know, absolutely. You don't want to just, hey, that person looks cool.
And that person's hitting 550, right? Yeah, right. I'll definitely want to take that. But body language, all those things matter as well, right? Like, I love what you said about, yeah, I like to go incognito. I like to maybe sneak to the dugout a little bit. I want to hear some things where, hey, maybe the kid, you know, doesn't know that people are listening, right? So, like, how important are those things? Because when they come to Fresno Pacific, you have a standard too with your program. What is allowed? What, you know, the types of things that you want to go on and off the field as well. But, you know, you mentioned how important they are, but do you think that the kids are really tuned into that, right? Like, we see a lot of celebrating these days, Coach, and we see a lot of, you know, a lot of me stuff. So what would you say to kids out there, right, as far as what coaches really, really want in a player?
Well, you know, I feel bad for kids and their families nowadays, and I'm going through it as well, you know, with my sons coming through. And you want the best for them, and you want them to reach, attain the highest of heights if they can, if it's possible. But the world is with social media is kind of, I feel like, twisting things up a little bit and getting us to value things that, or celebrate things that aren't valued by everybody else, you know, and this, the look at me kind of things. It's, so you're going to have good people do things that we don't love, all, you know, and it's just trying to, for us, navigate some of that stuff and kind of figure out who they are. But I guess that's the question that I would ask anybody that's doing the excessive celebrations and all that stuff is who's that for? And I go back to the game. Is that helping you and your team win? And some of it might be. I don't know. I'm not here trying to be holier than thou. But I don't think if you ever answer that question, who's that for? If it was for your Twitter followers or for a better video to be shared and viewed more, then we're getting pretty twisted up and we're not doing things for the right reasons. If you're in the moment, if it's truly in the moment and you got caught up in it, I've never been one to hold that against anybody. In fact, I kind of like that. If you're really in the moment with your team and you just helped them win or got them closer to a win, you know, okay, that's fine.
Talking with Oscar Hirschkorn, I got to mention those facilities, right? Just the beautiful upgrades that you guys have made. Just describe what's going on facility-wise at Fresno Pacific.
Yeah, I've been on quite a journey with this. The first 2 years of the program, we didn't have a field, so we played home games at 12 different locations. I can't even list them off anymore, but I used to be able to. And then the third year we were able to build the field on campus, and then a few years later, we were able to build our batting cages, which are great. There's a roof over the top. There's no walls, so it's like a pole barn type thing, but lights and big cages. And then a few years ago, we were able to do brand new netting, and then new turf a year or two ago. The years are blurring together, but ballpark. And then but we've always kind of had these old bleachers and you know,
the rickety
porta potties,
yeah.
and things and so yeah, we were blessed with this incredible donation from a wonderful family, and we've got a large sum of money, and now we're in the final stages of getting those little details finished for the plans, but we're going to be able to build a stadium with the press box and a roof over the top for the fans, stadium seating in the center section, and a clubhouse for our players. But so thrilled with that, to be able to provide that for our players. So locker room, showers, laundry, training room, coaches' offices. And then behind the stands, the bleachers are, or the stadium, are permanent concession and bathrooms. So will be a complete facility, and it feels good, Paul. I mean, it's just amazing to watch how just this blessing came upon us out of the what it feels like thin air, you know. And you know, where I mean, I've been wanting this, dreaming of this for a long time, years and years, and then just like that, it's in motion and happening. And it feels great because our players are going to have a great experience, and our fans are going to have an even better experience than they've had before.
Talking with Oscar Hirschhorn, head baseball coach at Fresno Pacific. So, all right, one and only coach since 2006. I'm a grad of the school, so we try to do a baseball club. I'm not kidding, at Fresno Pacific College. So I graduated in 94. We had yearbooks back then. There's a picture of like eight of us, part of the baseball club, and we had, you know, a bag, and we had, you know, some bats and stuff. And it was a pipe dream back then of starting a baseball program, and we weren't able to play, you know, Azusa Pacific. We kind of wanted to, but let's just say it never worked out.
Sure.
I bet you have some crazy stories though of trying to literally start a baseball program at a college, right? I mean, just where there's some moments you're like, "What am I doing right now? What did I get myself into?" I mean, do you have any stories of crazy stories that people wouldn't believe, or it, like maybe even seem like, did that really happen?
Oh man, there's so many, and we've come so far. What year was that when you were there?
94.
94. Oh wow. So they were. I didn't know how many years the club was attempted. Right before I was there, they had the club going alive and well.
And
I guess they were using that as justification for, you know, the decision makers that okay, it existed, so that means it's viable deal. I don't know why, but that's what I was told. But you know, we have some really cool people that with stories that were tied even to the club stuff that didn't really have any affiliation to the actual teams. But Dave Lockridge, I don't know if you know him, but he's been amazing to us in the program, and he was on one of the club teams trying to get it going, and then he ended up being pretty high up in Easton and then now Rawlings, and so he's really helped out our program every year, and I just very thankful for him. But yeah, you know, there are quite a few stories. Just the frustration, just starting from scratch. I mean, in this area, the feeling of NAIA baseball, because at that time we were NAIA, was that we were, or that level was kind of the equivalent to freshman high school baseball, and it wasn't. And thankfully, through my journey, I had kind of gotten to understand what that level looked like, as I had gone to a junior college, then Cal Poly, then Chico, as you referenced, and so I had my awakening to what that level looked like and how good it was. But most of the people around here, or enough people, didn't quite get that. So when we were literally starting from zero players. And I remember being told you need to get to 30 players this year. That was pretty firmly stated. You need to get to 30. And I think we had 33 or whatever it was, but how many times it felt like a salesman making cold calls, you know?
Well, yeah. Did people respond like, wait a second, Fresno Pacific is starting baseball, or who is this guy? Like that kind of stuff.
Well,
like,
in the baseball world, you had to even explain what Fresno Pacific was, because in the, you know, if you're chasing the baseball dream, Fresno Pacific didn't even exist. So that wasn't in anybody's conversation. But I knew we needed to try to be as local as we could. There's so much talent here, and if Fresno is your home, you don't have to sell Fresno, because that's also one of the hurdles that we've had to overcome over the years. You know, you're talking to some Orange County kids, they, you know, Fresno's not highly thought of. Same thing in some areas in the Bay Area. But if you're a Central California kid, it's, yeah, Fresno, of course. Yeah, that's great. And over the years, to watch some of that change, and it's changed significantly, that's been very gratifying, because, you know, there was some, you know, insulting things over the years that you not that you revenge or anything like that, but you do have a long memory,
absolutely,
and you remember
absolutely,
and you get those little victories when, oh, you know, when some of those minds are changed, and And you know, when we had the first player I ever signed was Mike Pierce, and he was our first draft pick. And so when we, that first year, we had to have a draft pick, that started to change people. And we had a solid year that first year for a first year program. And then in the third year, Chris Schwinden was drafted. Mm-hmm. And then he ends up making the major leagues. And so when you start to have some of that validate your program too, that accelerated quite a bit of our progress.
Do you have any crazy, like, van ride stories or vans breaking down? You guys play in Hawaii? Have you ever played in Hawaii?
Oh, yeah. I will tell you this because you reminded me of something. Any Fresno Pacific athlete that's listening to this, before we got the new buses, we had two old buses. They were one was a 1970s bus and one was a 72. And there was, if it had air conditioning, it didn't work. So when we would go on these trips, we'd have to pop the hatches at the top, and just everybody's got their shirts off just to try to cool off, you know, because the end of the year, it's hot.
Yeah.
Just crazy stories like that. Of course, those buses broke down on the Grapevine, and so we had quite a few of those, and that was not unique to just the baseball team. That was every Fresno Pacific athlete until we got those newer buses. They were in the 2000s, and now we charter. But yeah, there's a lot of those. For anybody listening that rode those buses, they'll know exactly what I'm talking about. Because you felt every bump.
You did.
You know, yeah. You're going up the hill in the Grapevine, and I had players yelling out, "Let me out! I think I could run faster than anyways." So
we only got a couple minutes here, okay. Coach. All right. So we didn't even get into your time at Chico or Reedley. I want to talk about Jack Hacker next time. All right, I got to promise you, next year we'll come on and we'll chop a little bit more, because I know Jack Hacker, the Kings River / Reedley baseball coach, is a huge influence on your life. Just a great guy. He was a friend of my father's as well. So, but anyway, growing up, or even right now, who are some of your favorite Major League Baseball guys?
You know, when I was growing up, I have a twin brother, and we were the first athletes in the family. My parents weren't really into sports, but thankfully they let us, you know, chase our dreams. And so we were very into the Fresno Bee and those old box scores. And we would just pour over the box scores and look at stats and, you know, all the things. So, you know, Ricky Henderson, and his stealing the bases, it was always an infatuation with both my brother and I. And then, Tony Gwynn and Wade Boggs battling it out in the you know, every single year, hitting felt like 350, 360 or whatever, each in their own respective league. But so I didn't really have a favorite team, but we would follow our players, you know. But my youngest son, Jensen, Steve Ramirez in Kingsburg, was his very first coach. And you and I both know Steve. And excuse me, he was a Dodgers fan through and through. So every year Jensen was on, for 3 or 4 years, was on the Dodgers. So that was locked in his favorite team. So we would, you know, let him watch his favorite team, and his favorite player was Corey Seager. And so watching the Dodgers, and several of those players were fun to watch. I did like, Justin Turner, Corey Seager, but I personally am not, just a Dodger. I personally don't have a favorite team, but I still do the same thing. I like to follow players.
Well, there's nothing wrong with Tony Gwynn, Wade Boggs, Ricky Henderson, that old crop of guys that I grew up loving as well. And so anyway, Coach, it's been a pleasure. You know, you are extremely well respected. You know, everybody I talk to just raves about you, and you know, your sons are great kids. You've raised them right, and you're doing great things at Fresno Pacific. So thanks for taking the drive from Kingsburg and talking about yourself and your journey and everything good that's going on in the baseball world.
Oh, thanks so much for having me. I really enjoyed it. Thank you. I'd love to do it anytime.
Anytime. All right. I got you. All right. Thanks. That was Oscar Hirschhorn, head baseball coach at Fresno Pacific. Coming up after the break, we got some Hoover baseball guys. Those guys are rolling. They are in the semifinals of Division IV. Coach Jones is in the house with a couple players here on 1430 ESPN. Bees Air Plumbing and Heating right now is what, 78 degrees? Mentioned last week that our run of 90 degrees is probably going to start, I think, next week. We're going to be sitting like 87, 88 towards the end of the week. So thanks to Lee's Air Plumbing and Heating for our weather update. I just had a really good conversation with Fresno Pacific coach Oscar Hirschhorn. You know, that's a guy they definitely have to have on later. There were tons of topics that we weren't able to get on. We're talking about the transfer portal and how 4,000 or 5,000 kids are going to be in the transfer portal this year. So it's kind of a mess, and we hear about that all the time. But it'd be good to get some insight on what that really looks like. I know it's just a list. It's just a list of players like, oh, this kid play here. Let me do a little research. So it's, I don't know, the game has changed. The game has definitely changed at the college level. Sticking with high school baseball right now, Hoover's had a phenomenal run. I've followed them throughout the season. Coach David Jones has done an incredible job. Was on my show last year. We have Asa and Aiden Medina here as well. I love the social media, man. As far as keeping track of these kids and the Hoover Patriots baseball program has done a great job with social media. I love when I see those updates and see these kids, you know, have good games. They're in the D4 semifinals. They defeated Madera South, a familiar foe, 9-2. Yesterday, and we'll face number one Liberty Madera on Tuesday. Coach, welcome.
Thank you. Thanks for having us in.
Yeah, absolutely. I see you all the time here, man. You're coming in here. You're buying baseballs here at First String Sports. You're getting helmets. You're picking stuff up, waving to you in the back. So, Coach Jones, you've done a great job. You're on my show last year, and I really love the conversations that we had. Guys took care of business yesterday. Can you, Coach Jones, just break down yesterday's win and what worked in that one?
Yeah, yesterday was that was a complete game all the way around. Like, that was a team win. We went into playoffs thinking, okay, we have a pretty respectable seed in D4. We felt that we had earned that. So I told the kids, you belong here. I have a young team, so convincing them not to be overwhelmed was a challenge early. We started with Exeter, which we've played Exeter a few years in a row, and you know, we went down there last year and they beat the crap out of us. Then we had them at home early in the season and we won a close game, and we knew that they're, you know, Coach Kirkman does a good job. That's a well-coached team, fundamentally sound. We knew we were in for a battle. Good lefty on the mound, so we really prepared, and we were fortunate to get by them. And then, you know, Madera South, somebody we played twice in league, we split with them. We didn't feel like we played our best baseball when we went to Madera South, and they got us. So we felt like if we played our game and played good defense and executed at the plate, that they were beatable. And I think we executed our game plan very well. The top of our order got on base. First four guys ended up scoring all 9 runs, and so that's what we teach, right? Their job is to get on base, and then we have to figure out a way to get them in. So that combined with Asa, my sophomore right-hander here, he's been on a roll on the mound. He's in the last 37 innings, he's only given up 2 earned, and that was yesterday. So we felt like we had the right guy at the right time, and the boys are just clicking.
And you got, they're right here. So you speak very, very highly of these two young men. You know, when I texted you yesterday about coming on the show and, hey, can you bring a player? You're like, can I bring two? I got to bring, if I bring one brother, I'm bringing the other. So I want you, Coach, first, and we'll talk to the boys in just a second. But what do each of these guys mean to your program? What do they bring to the ball field every day?
Well, I took over last year, which everyone knows, post-COVID program was down. All schools were down. I had heard about the Medina brothers. Aiden started as a freshman on varsity and did very well. And then here comes Asa. So I start my first year last year with 6 freshmen and a few sophomores. But I could see very quickly that what I was – the plan to build was going to center around these two. High baseball IQ, love of the game, incredible work ethics, 2 different personalities. Aiden is a hard worker, quiet, and just leads by his work ethic. Asa, the younger, the sophomore, also a very hard worker, a little more vocal. He's the guy to get on the team, to stay in it and not let down. So they have different personalities, but the thing they share is they love baseball, they know baseball, and they work every day at getting better at baseball. So that was, without a doubt, a no-brainer, is how am I going to build this club, and it was going to be around these two.
Well, bringing up the stats here on Max Preps, and of course Max Preps, they only put the first initial of the first name. So looking at A. Medina, right? One's a junior, one's a sophomore. So 453 batting average, pretty impressive, to a 341 batting average. Lots of doubles. I see 15 doubles on the season, and both are pitchers, right? And so they've done an incredible job. I want to ask, let's start with Asa. So yesterday's win against Madera South, like, what was the confidence level? It's a home game, right? So you're playing on your own field, but talk about the confidence level going into that game.
You know, I definitely had a lot of confidence going into it. The goal was just to keep everyone in it all seven innings, and I think we did a good job at doing that, having me just pitching strikes, letting the defense work, and letting them make plays.
And then what was there after you guys beat them? So it's a 9-2 game. You mentioned you split with them during league play. Was it a big celebration? Was it like, hey, we kind of belong now? Like, how would you describe after the game?
It was a big celebration. Like, we were all hyped. We're ready, you know. We expected to come out ready to play, and we did what we needed to.
Absolutely. Now you're going to be playing the top seed, Liberty of Madera. Been following them all year too, and they just keep winning ball games. So, Aiden, what are you looking forward to most when you guys are playing at Liberty of Madera Tuesday?
Yeah, we really just got to play Hoover baseball, which is what we've been doing all year. We've won 10 in a row, I think, with Adrian Arredondo or Asa on the mound. We play very well. So Asa probably has a bump Tuesday. We're just going to continue to play defense. We've been playing. We haven't really made much errors. We make the plays we're supposed to make, put the bat on ball, which we're going to see a really good pitcher on Tuesday. So we just got to keep swinging it. And I think with our lineup, we got good guys at the top of the lineup, in the middle, some great bunters, and then the bottom of the lineup, they come through when they come through. So I think we will be good.
Well, it sounds like, Coach, hearing the brothers talk, like, your players have really fit into the role, right? Whether it's the number nine hitter, he knows his job. Right fielder knows his job. Is that the case with this team?
Yeah, when you have a young team, the speed of the varsity level, and especially when you get into these playoffs, the game picks up, right? Everybody's good. Exeter was good. Madera South is good. Liberty is good. All well-coached, good teams. So I've got some smaller guys, and like I say, I got a freshman starting. I have several sophomores starting. So we've really had to be creative as a staff, how we were going to use those guys to put runs on the board. Our goal is to put one up an inning. And then, you know, occasionally you have that water break and you throw up crooked numbers. But we try and get a run across every inning through execution and then timely hitting. And some guy, I have a left-handed second baseman. He's a team guy. He was too small. I have better outfielders, but that kid can bunt the baseball, and I needed to find a spot for him. And he's done a phenomenal job at second base. He makes plays for us. And I just love that he's embraced. We preach. You walk into our dugout and it says team first, success follows. He's embraced it. So the guys know their role, and they know their role on the team. And that's the culture I wanted to set from day one. And it has come to fruition.
Asa, I want to ask you about goals before the season. Like, did you have a goal of like, hey, Fresno High is a very good baseball team. We knew they were, and they went undefeated in the league. Do you have a goal of like, hey, we want to compete with those guys. We want to get second or third place. Hey, we want to win a playoff game or two. Was that kind of the mindset? We're just like, hey, we want to play our best baseball and see what happens.
The goal was to take one game at a time, you know, don't look past anyone. And then the Fresno High game, we definitely wanted to take one, which we didn't, but we came in ready to play, and I think we still did a good job against them.
Aiden, what do you think for you? Like, did you have a certain amount of goals before the season as far as what do you want to accomplish during the year, or team goals?
One thing I really always tell the team is go 1-0 every single day. I watched a podcast about the Washington Nationals in 2019, how they started off like 19-31, and they ended up winning the World Series. And Davey Martinez, I think, is a manager. He said, just go 1-0 every day. And that's really what I've been trying to preach to these guys. Go 1-0 every single day. Just do your job on this day. Don't look past towards the next game, because we came into Friday and we were thinking about semis, and then Jones got on us and to basically like lock in right now, because there is no Tuesday if we don't do our job on Friday. So really, that's what I preach to these kids.
We're talking to Hoover High coach Dave Jones and Aiden and Asa Medina. Coach, what does it mean for the program to be in the semifinals, right, to win these two playoff games?
That's emotional for me. I have an incredible group of alumni who have been reaching out so much, and just saying, this means so much to us, to see this success, to see this turnaround. For me, I think for any coach, fulfillment comes from seeing your players succeed, from seeing them grasp a concept that is beyond baseball, how to work together, how to fill a role, do whatever is necessary for the person next to you. Tim Carey, our old athletic director, came to the field this morning when we were taking BP and said, it's the farthest Hoover has gone since 2001. That hit me. I don't know those numbers. You know, I'm new to this at Hoover. So I've told these kids, like, you do belong. Embrace what is happening to you. And we keep it real. You go out and play your best baseball. You hit and you field, and at the end of the game, you're either up or you're down. That's how baseball works. But like Aiden said, they were a little cocky at the beginning of practice after Exeter, and I had warned them, you know, every team is good. You don't get punched in the mouth, and they tuned it up quickly.
I want to ask the brothers, how has Coach helped facilitate your love of the game, and what type of things has Coach instilled in you?
There's days where, like, we would, like, dominate a team and we'd be so up, and the next day at practice, it's like the energy's still up, but he doesn't want us to be so loose to where, like, we get lazy. Like, we still got work to do. So I think just we have to be, like, locked in the moment. We got to be focused, like, from the time we step into the dugout to when we step out. So I think Jones, he does a really good job at keeping us locked in, even if we're playing like a not a good school. But then there will be a week where we do play a good school, and then that's where we really got to tune in and lock in and continue to play baseball the way we've been playing.
Asa, how's Coach helped shape your baseball career?
Definitely, like, he just preaches, like, don't look past anyone. Doesn't matter who it is. Doesn't matter their record. Just don't look past them.
Did you guys play? You guys played baseball throughout your whole life? Like, did you guys start off with soccer or anything? Did you do a little 5-year-old soccer, or has it always been baseball for you guys?
Yeah, that was our soccer was our first sport, and I hated it. And I would always ask my friends, like, what time or at what age did you start playing baseball? And they would say like 4 or 5. I didn't start playing until I was 8, so I feel like I was kind of on the later end, but we've like grew up playing together pretty much.
So you're one year apart. Asa, you're the sophomore, and Aiden, you're the junior. Do you guys always play on the same baseball teams, the Little League, growing up? Was it just always the Medina brothers?
Yeah, it was. It was always me playing up a year, playing with Aiden, you know, him always at shortstop, me always at second base, and you know, it was fun, and we're still doing it in high school, so it's still a joy.
So last year you guys were on varsity, right? How have you guys seen the team grow from last year to this year?
Yeah, so a lot of the guys, we've like played Little League together. So growing up, we've always had that chemistry of playing together. We know each other so well. So I think like playing together over time, over a long period of time, that's very important, because that builds chemistry. And we know, we talk well with each other on the field. We know what to do and like when to do it. We communicate very well. And I think when we play as a whole and we don't focus on individual stats or stuff like that, that's really when we start to, like, how would I say?
Just
like,
buy in.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Asa, what about for you? Have you seen the team grow?
I have. I think we've all matured a lot, like, on the field and off the field. A lot of us have matured a lot, taking practices more seriously. Last year, it was more, like, for fun. I think this year we started taking practice more seriously, and it's shown.
And I think that's a tribute to Coach Jones and the investment that he has put into the program. And Coach, you know, we've talked a few times, and I've already seen the blood, sweat, and tears, and you know, and the amount of time and effort and passion you put into your program is definitely showing up, and it's great. And so last year at this time, maybe it was a little bit before, but we were out there trying to get donations for the program. We got about 3 minutes to talk about this stuff, but you made a concentrated effort to get out there to the community and say, hey, Hoover Baseball, we'll put baseball back on the map in Hoover and in the area. And you're like, hey, we got to get our feeder programs ready. We got to get them equipment. We got to get kids out there. So how have you seen that evolve from a passion and a dream to where it is right now?
Well, I mean, obviously we started the nonprofit. First thing we did was have a huge equipment drive, and, you know, I'll forever love the baseball community in Central Valley. Fonsi, Delena, Donald, Pappy, all those guys. We gathered about $10,000 worth of equipment. Guys cleaning out their garages. You know, these players these days, they buy a new bat a year. They brought so much stuff. We were able to donate about 60 gloves, 40 bats, countless helmets, 9 sets of catcher's gear to the Carry League, which is where these kids started. And that's just that league's suffering, and travel ball is the death of Little League. And so that grew. Then I reached out to some alumni. We had a meeting, really got the alumni involved. We had our first dinner, Hall of Fame dinner. That was a big success. So we were able to gather some funds to make some really good upgrades. We're about to invest $10,000 to redo the infield with professional dirt that we're having shipped up from San Diego, which that field is in dire need of. These kids, you know, now have good practice gear to wear, new uniforms, replaced our batting nets. I mean, that all... If you don't have money, you don't take pride in your field, you don't take pride in your facilities, and it, I don't care what people say, it affects how you play. And we've tried to do everything possible to give these kids every opportunity for success. And they've raised money, the parents, we only have 11 people on varsity. But the parents have all chipped in and helped us raise money, and they support. So it's been great. And but it's an ongoing process, because then there's next year, right?
And there's still this year. You guys are going to be playing Liberty Madera in the semifinals of Division IV playoffs. All right, boys, we got a couple minutes here to spend with you. I got a couple fun questions for you guys. You guys ready for these? Mm-hmm. All right. Would you rather eat pizza or tacos for dinner once a week?
Tacos.
Good answer. Yeah. All right. Good answer. All right. Be a phenomenal singer or a phenomenal dancer?
Phenomenal dancer.
I'd be a phenomenal singer.
Oh, all right. We went the opposite here. All right. Would you rather wake up at 5 a.m. every day or wake up at noon every day?
5 a.m.
Oh, early birds. I like it. All right. You don't need to sleep in, right? 5 a.m. Let's get after it. All right. You guys into video games at all?
Not really.
Look at these guys. These guys are all business here.
100%.
I love it. All right. Good luck, guys. I really enjoy talking to you. Good luck the rest of the way. I've followed you all season. Coach Jones has done an amazing job. Again, the passion and everything just shines through with you. What will you guys have to do against Liberty Madera to advance to the championship games?
We got to play our game. Like, we got to go out swinging, got to swing the bat, got to play good defense, and just play and just do what we've been doing.
Yeah, we're not going to admire them. Like, yeah, they're the one seed. They're 24-6, but we're just going to do what we've been doing all year. We're not going to think, oh, like, they got this guy, or we're not going to, like, really admire any of their players. We're just going to focus on us, do our job, and then, like, it's baseball. Anything can happen.
I love it. I love the mentality. I love the attitude. Coach Jones, thanks for coming in. I always appreciate talking to you, and really admire what you're doing.
Yeah, Paul, we appreciate it. Thanks for having us. And again, as always, thanks for always keeping high school in the forefront. We appreciate that so much.
You're welcome. Thanks to First String Sports, Jorge Rodriguez, Gabe Camarillo, Mike Noel, Clovis Softball, Oscar Hirschkorn, Fresno Pacific, Coach David Jones, the brothers Asa and Aiden Medina. Have a good week, everybody. We'll talk to you soon.
You're listening to the home of the San Francisco Giants, KFIG Fresno, 1430 ESPN.